I would actually like at this point to depart from the program and to go on to the fourth presentation before you get your coffee and whatever delicacy is out there. And I think Rich Mashovsky is going to pinch hit for David Merritt and Avi Loeb, who have who have left town.
Yes.
Yes, we have a
transfer of power here.
Yeah, we should. Okay,
just slide this out.
Right. So, I think the most important thing to say is I am not Dave Merritt, Avi Loeb, or Pierre Madow. So I was sitting there taking notes, and I got asked to summarize the session. So I apologize in advance. The session is the genesis and evolution of black holes, and the opening joke is that we went from Genesis to Numbers.
Yes.
Skipping right over Leviticus and Exodus.
yes, Exodus too.
So the two main paths that were discussed, Dave Merritt did dynamics and Avi Loeb did gastrophysics. The main problem is, how do you create a massive black hole? And there are observational evidences that objects of 10 to the 8th solar mass exist at redshifts greater than 3. So that's certainly a serious problem. And then a directly correlated problem is that we now know, as we heard in the talks earlier, that the massive black holes and the galaxy in which it lives are related to each other. Okay? There seems to be this quasi-narrow range in the masses of the two systems, and therefore there must be a strong connection between massive black holes and galaxy evolution. Okay, so cosmology creeps its ugly head in no matter where you look. So the main paths are basically dynamics, and the fundamental concept is you have an evolution of a massive, and I put the word star in quotes because the nature of this object is not entirely clear, cluster via dynamical evolution, dynamical friction and things like that, or the processes are basically gas processes, and of course one can merge these two, where you have galaxy merging, therefore you form bars, you form thick disks, you may even form superstars, and how do these evolve? This is of course a slightly modern update of Martin Rees's classical picture, where all paths lead to a massive black hole. There are a few where he didn't have them, and part of this session was talking about a tightly bound system of few bodies which actually may now go to a black hole with a little more calculation. This is such a wonderful diagram, we could spend the whole session talking about this, but these two paths, the supermassive star, the cluster of compact objects and normal stars, were talked about extensively in the session, as well as another path, which amazingly enough is not on this diagram, which is the formation of a thick disk. So the question is, how does dynamics actually work, and what's the fundamental problem? Well, the fundamental problem is that you just can't, stuff the stuff down fast enough, right? Dave Merritt gave me this picture. I think this was drawn by Sterl Finney. There's a little monster, right? And you're trying to feed it really fast, and it just doesn't work. In other words, the classical time scale, the saltpeter time scale for growth of a massive black hole is 4 times 10 to the 8th years times the Eddington efficiency. So you just can't grow things very rapidly. The universe doesn't give you enough time. You can't stuff down fast in the classical approach. So you have to do something else. Okay. And so Dave Merritt talked a lot about dynamical friction. And the main problems there is you don't know, well, there's many main problems, one of which is you don't know where to start. Okay? In other words, you have to invent a theoretical object, a massive star cluster, which has some properties, a density, velocity dispersion, a size, and some number of stellar black holes or tight binaries, which help a lot in the process. Then you have to evolve it. And Dave talked a lot about the special numerical problems. You have a very high dynamic range that's needed. This is not part of most codes. So it's a special code that's needed, and unfortunately the only person who worked on such codes, Quinlan, has left the field. Okay. Then the evolution depends an awful lot on other things. For example, do you create supermassive black hole binaries? If so, how do they evolve? Do they even exist? You could argue from the hierarchical theory of galaxy formation that such things should exist. Galaxies do strongly merge. We now believe that most galaxies host black holes in their center. So one of the suggested topics is that we could study the evolution of massive black hole binaries. In particular, can we get information on the distribution of their separation, which would be observable? In other words, the theoretical calculation, you start with hierarchical clustering, you start to merge these systems, how do these evolve? For LISA, things like their merger rate are, of course, extremely important, and that would be a very nice output of a theoretical procedure. And there are other observable signatures of basically dynamical friction in the center of galaxies. Dave Merritt points out that you change these curves correspond to different amounts of dynamical friction that occur different fractions of the total mass in black holes. Basically, you make a much shallower cusp in the center. What happens, of course, is all the radial orbits get thrown out. Stars that can interact with the binary black hole get expelled. So you're left behind with highly circular orbits in the center. This is the anisotropy parameter of the orbital distribution. He's calculated this for a physical object, and you find a very large amount of anisotropy. This is a relevant paper. This is, of course, directly observable, but he stressed that these calculations were in a very preliminary nature, and therefore the bottom line was there had been very little work on this problem, that most of the ideas came from the early 60s, and that the existence of a correlation between the galaxies and black holes suggests the importance of the problem. So this was one of the suggested areas of study. Okay. The other approach, the gas I stole the word gastrophysics from our friends in Canada. So it's anyhow, hydrodynamics. And basically the idea is that galaxy mergers are very important in the early universe. Avi Loeb presented this material. And that a tidal interaction transfers angular momentum and drives gas into the center. This is actually seen in low redshift starburst galaxies. This is not a process that's ad hoc. And therefore, you end up with two paths, depending on whether the cooling time is less than the viscous time scale, or the viscous time scale is less than the cooling time scale. And in Avi Loeb's view graphs, basically, you have galaxy mergers, so you have a stellar potential, a dark matter potential with lots of gas. Okay, so these are very gassy systems. They're falling together and become a merger system. The tidal interaction drives angular momentum. And depending on which process is dominating, cooling or viscosity, if cooling dominates, you end up with a self-gravitating gaseous disk, which can do all sorts of wonderful things, evolve rapidly, may even form stars inside of it. Then may fragment or may not fragment, may accrete into a central seed black hole or not. And this is a potentially very rapid path to a massive black hole. Or you create a theoretical object, which is a supermassive star, which then has a radiation dominated in the center, cools at the Eddington rate, basically. Clearly, this is a very unstable object, sheds mass and angular momentum along the sides, and this evolves also very rapidly to a black hole. So Avi basically had these two paths where you're forming a central black hole by gas dynamical processes, a supermassive disk or a supermassive star, and then the last spot is the black hole. Again, these ideas have not been, are rather old, again, the 1960s. They have not been worked out in detail recently. And one of the suggestions is, let's do some of this. Let's work this out. How do these systems evolve? Do they fragment or do they accrete into a single black hole? What is the importance of the distribution of angular momentum in emerging galaxies? Of course, as these systems come together, the total angular momentum is a very important part of the process. There are cosmological calculations that will give us the distribution of angular momentum. That's work by Jim Peebles about 20 years ago. So this is an input parameter rather than a parameter to be derived. A whole issue of, if we go through this merging process, how do we seed the primordial galaxies with black holes? Do black holes form in galaxies of low mass? There are issues of cooling and ionization. And then, of course, if we do populate these low-mass merger fragments with black holes, we're going to end up with many, many, many black holes in a galaxy like our own. A very, very simple scaling law would be that we seem to be seeing the direct collapse of objects of roughly 10 to the 9th solar masses in the Hubble deep images, or at least that's one interpretation of the data. Therefore, roughly 100 fragments have come together to form the Milky Way or a giant elliptical galaxy. You might have 100 10 to the 5th solar mass black holes roaming around. Can you see them? They don't all fall to the center. So one possible challenge is, what is the merger history of these halos and their constituent black holes? What happens? How many are there? And where are they today? I like this here because I think it's a wonderful connection of two enormously diverse fields in astrophysics, massive black holes and the evolution of galaxies. And I think one of the enormous surprises in the last year or two is how connected these systems seem to be with each other. I am unaware of anybody who made a prediction, really, about the direct... The connection of the formation of black holes and galaxies was talked about, but the wonderful narrowness of that range, how strongly connected they are. And it's even more strongly connected than has been discussed at this meeting, because black holes are the source of ionization of the intergalactic medium, we believe, at least at redshifts less than 4. How the intergalactic medium can fall into mass... I mean, the galaxies have to grow. They grow by accretion. They grow by accreting the intergalactic medium. How that process happens is directly related to its ionization. We get direct feedback, therefore, between black holes and cosmology and galaxy evolution. We get direct feedback into the creation of metals and the cooling of the universe. This, I think, would be a wonderful thing to study. Unfortunately, it's not a four-month project. But I think this is, in some ways, one of the really nice holy grails of the field, which has developed in the last year or two. And just to show how these halos merge, this is, well, Avi Loeb made this figure, but I think this is based on the Cole and Lacey merging tree calculations, just to stress that, you know, here's our galaxy today. It came from a very large number of progenitors. There were other issues discussed in the panel. Let's find that geograph. Okay. So one of the things was, how do we form these seeds? If we're going to do dynamical evolution, one of the main free parameters is how many stellar mass black hole seeds there are. That is one of the main drivers of the evolution of these systems. We had a presentation about what we know about stellar evolution, and when and how black holes form. Do they form from systems as low in mass as 15 solar masses or not? This is a very strong impact on dynamics. These very massive stars do evolve rapidly. There was a very, to me, very interesting discussion about the formation of stars in the outer regions of the accretion disk itself, which is gravitationally unstable. And this is a way of self-seeding the disk with metals, which are very important for our observing. You know, we observe the metal emission lines. And we also observe in the X-ray band Compton reflection and iron lines, which are also direct signatures of the metals. But this is a very interesting idea that Susie Collin presented based on some previous ideas, I guess, by Doug Lin and colleagues. And I was quite entertained that she went out and produced enough metals to produce BAL quasars, which went out in galactic winds, which seeded the intergalactic medium. So we came back again to galaxy formation in the IGM. What are the visible effects? I mean, we know there are stars, and we know there are black holes. They have to be interacting with each other. What do you see? What are the visible effects? We have the combination of tidal disruption and mass gorging, eating, direct eating, I guess. But I don't think anyone has really discussed in detail what are the observational consequences of what has to be occurring. This is a process that nature will produce for us. And then the final thing, this is discussed by two of the speakers, Ivan Hubeni and Amin Van Del, can we actually use the observational data, fit the observed spectra, like we do for the galactic black holes, to derive a mass spectrum of black holes in the early universe? Is this a sensible process, a procedure? So I think that sort of summarizes what happened.
Well, thanks very much, Rich, for the final and excellent presentation and for filling in for those who have left us. I'm sure they hear you. Thank you very much.